Hello and welcome to our program, Fortune Magazine, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm John St. Pierre, and during the next half hour, I will be reading two articles from the April-May 2024 edition of Fortune Magazine, here on Owl Radio. Prior articles from this edition of Fortune Magazine can be found on our podcast page at owlradio.org. Our stories today are both about power, the power of women in Hollywood to effect change, and the power of AI to potentially take our jobs. Sit back and relax, and we'll dig right in with The New Hollywood Power Paradigm by Ellie Austin. Connie Britton doesn't often hear the word no. The Emmy-nominated actress and producer has a string of iconic credits, including starring roles in The White Lotus, Friday Night Lights, and Nashville. She's a venture investor, a Dartmouth board member, and United Nations Goodwill Ambassador. But the show that her company, Deep Blue Productions, was developing in 2022 wasn't winning over-the-top brass at a Hollywood studio she pitched. An intergenerational drama called Hysterical Women, it would center on four women, each experiencing a different hormonal shift. We've got a daughter who is getting her period, a mother who is perimenopausal, her sister who is trying to go through fertility treatments, and then we've got the grandmother who is through menopause and having the best sex of her life, Britton told an audience of female corporate leaders at the Fortune Most Powerful Women in Summit in October. It's a fantastic show. Who wouldn't watch that show? The audience laughed and murmured assent. And yet, Britton told them, Hysterical Women was not greenlit. The reason for this? The studio already had a show on the air with four women, and executives felt there wasn't the space or audience appetite for a second. The anecdote elicited rueful laughter. Granted, a show about hysterical, hormonal women might not be for everyone, but Britton's point was clear. Men still run much of Hollywood. The demoralizing reality, Britton told Fortune in a follow-up interview, is that even now, there is not as much space for women-run and women-led programming. That's true even 6 years after the Me Too movement went viral, and Time's Up, a workplace equity and anti-sexual harassment movement spearheaded by Hollywood women, was launched. 2023 was touted as the year of the girl in pop culture, with Taylor Swift, Beyoncé, SZA, and Barbie dominating the cultural zeitgeist and adding billions to the economy. But the top layer of entertainment industry power is still largely a boys' club. There remains a glaring disconnect between the economic impact of women as consumers, they make up 44% of TV viewers across platforms, and the way that art and entertainment made by and for them is valued by industry decision makers. Even Barbie, a wry, stylish take on women's empowerment that earned almost $1.5 billion to become Warner Brothers' highest-grossing worldwide release of all time, offered an illustration of this when its director and star, Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie, respectively, were snubbed in January's Oscar nominations. The Barbie omission feels like part of a pattern in which women are seen but not heard, says Maureen Ryan, author of the 2023 book, Burn It Down, Power, Complicity, and a Call for Change in Hollywood. They are supposed to succeed and then quietly be put back into their boxes and placed back on the shelf. Time's Up was meant to address some of this. Launched in 2018, it drew support and donations from some of Hollywood's biggest stars, including Julianne Moore, Oprah Winfrey, America Ferrera, and Meryl Streep. For a multitude of reasons, during that period, I felt more empowered, says Alicia Reiner, an actress and producer known for playing Natalie Fig Figueroa in Orange is the New Black. If I see something, I say something in a different way than I did in the past. I am not the naive 22-year-old who was willing to do some really inappropriate things in the beginning of my career just because I thought that's what you had to do. Since then, Time's Up as an organization imploded amid a string of alleged conflicts of interest. Me Too, meanwhile, has not prompted the deep societal change it once seemed poised to. But the women galvanized by those movements haven't given up the fight. With Time's Up, there was a united power base of allies and very high-powered executives and actors who continue to run with the baton, says Madeline DiNonno, president and CEO of the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media. The people who were involved haven't lost their passion or activism. Just as in Barbie, women in Hollywood are taking control of their own narrative. Some of the industry's biggest stars, including many of an age often considered over the hill for women in film and TV, are creating levers of influence to upend traditional power structures. Screen luminaries such as Britton, Lena Waithe, Reese Witherspoon, and Viola Davis are creating new tools for change, including female production companies, formal and informal mentorship, and multi-platform business empires built on gargantuan social media followings. These enterprises are getting shows into the production pipeline and scoring hits such as Big Little Lies and Bad Sisters, showing Hollywood's risk-averse bean counters that there is an audience, a large one, for women-led stories. The impact of these efforts are showing up in some of Hollywood's splashiest projects. The latest season of True Detective, a show that has generally featured male protagonists, stars Jodie Foster and Kaylee Reese and has a Mexican woman director in Issa Lopez. Shows with ensemble casts of women of various ages are far more common than they were in the days of the Golden Girls or even Sex and the City. Among the recent crop are Expats, Feud, and Yellowjackets. To be sure, beyond the marquee names, the overall numbers are still rather grim. A recent study by the University of Southern California's Annenberg Inclusion Initiative found that only 30 of 2023's 100 top-grossing movies featured women and girls in lead or co-lead roles. Depressingly, this figure is the same as 2010's. There are several people who are doing phenomenally well, whether it's Issa Rae or Ava DuVernay or Chloe Zhao or Reese Witherspoon, says Stacy Smith, a USC professor and the founder of the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. The problem is that if you can think of a few examples off the top of your head and you call those to mind, you're going to overestimate the class of events that you're trying to figure out. Still, it's worth examining the strategies that A-listers are leveraging to democratize the industry for women less recognizable than themselves. Many are fusing their activist principles with shrewd business strategy. Here are four of those approaches. Become an online tastemaker. In 2013, the actress and producer Reese Witherspoon launched her new Instagram account with a Mother's Day message. She then posted a photo of J. Courtney Sullivan's novel, The Engagements. "I love this book," she wrote. "Has anyone else read?" This unassuming glimpse into Witherspoon's off-screen life was the genesis of Reese's Book Club, which spotlights a woman-centered title each month and now has almost 3 million Instagram followers. The club swiftly became a literary kingmaker, or queenmaker. Less than a year after Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens was selected by Witherspoon in 2018, the novel had sold over 1 million copies, an impressive feat for a work by a then-unknown author whose initial print run was about 28,000. The book has since been adopted by Witherspoon's media company, Hello Sunshine, of course, into a movie that made $144 million worldwide on a reported $24 million budget. Its success attests to the power of Witherspoon's multi-platform strategy. Others have followed the model of Reese's Book Club and its precursor, Oprah's Book Club, and no wonder. Such clubs can build attention and fan bases for books, helping movie and TV show adaptations get greenlit. It's a very effective formula for boosting the value of the all-important intellectual property that's Hollywood's lifeblood. Popularizing a book is also a way to test material, says actress, writer, and producer Lena Waithe. Her media company, Hillman Grad, has a book imprint in partnership with independent publisher Zando. Every book doesn't need to be turned into a movie or a TV series, Waithe tells Fortune, but if a book does well, it already has a built-in audience. Hold the door open. Mentorship has always existed in Hollywood and has proved especially important for women. Jane Fonda learned from Katharine Hepburn on the set of On Golden Pond, and Viola Davis received life advice from Meryl Streep. But the glaring inequalities exposed by the Me Too and Black Lives Matter movements have inspired some to develop more formal, business-focused strategies to increase the number of women and people of color in leadership roles. Waithe's Hillman grad also runs a mentorship lab for creatives from underrepresented backgrounds. The lab ushers around 24 mentees a year through the tuition-free 8-month program in 3 tracks: writing, acting, and executive development. That last category is key, Waithe notes. Most execs and people who have greenlighting ability don't look like me. And if there is somebody in that office or C-suite who does look like us, there's usually only one of them, so they can probably get maybe 1 or 2 movies through. Hello Sunshine is focusing on entrepreneurial mentorship as well, with the recently launched Hello Sunshine Collective, which provides female business leaders and content creators with support from the company's leadership in areas including marketing, strategy, and partnerships. The collective worked with 17 women for its inaugural cohort. And just as in Fonda's era, mentorship and mutual support occur via quiet, unofficial channels too. People say in our industry, it's about relationships, Waithe notes. It's actually about friendships, because you can have a relationship with a lot of people, but if you have a real friendship, it becomes about more than the business. Mixing friendship with business has become a power move for women in Hollywood, whether it's Jamie Lee Curtis and Jodie Foster publicly proclaiming their besties status, or Witherspoon championing projects that provide her friends, Laura Dern, Nicole Kidman, and Octavia Spencer, to name a few, with interesting roles in middle age. Scroll through social media and you'll see Salma Hayek, Zoe Saldana, and Penelope Cruz declaring their love for one another, or Kerry Washington celebrating Regina King, Issa Rae, and Shonda Rhimes. While these posts aren't explicitly activist, their proliferation sends a potent message to networks and studios. The industry's most influential women are now a united front, prepared to share ideas, pay equity data, and experiences in the name of making Hollywood more democratic. Speak up about fair pay. In 2018, it emerged that the actress Michelle Williams was paid significantly less than her co-star Mark Wahlberg to appear in All the Money in the World. The following year, when accepting the Best Actress Emmy for a different project, Williams made an impassioned plea to employers. Next time a woman, and especially a woman of color, because she stands to make 52 cents on the dollar compared to her white male counterpart, tells you what she needs in order to do her job, listen to her, she said. Believe her. Since then, women in the industry have only become more vocal on the subject of gender and race-based pay discrepancies. In recent months, The Color Purple's Taraji P. Henson has candidly discussed the racial pay gap she has experienced throughout her career, for example. There's been a lot more outspoken activism, says Liz Alper, a TV writer and producer and the co-founder of advocacy organization Pay Up Hollywood. The need for fair pay for all workers in TV and film is talked about much more openly than it used to be, which is wonderful, she says, adding, we still have a long way to go. As in the corporate world, admitting to being underpaid can come at a reputational cost. You want everyone to perceive you as making a lot of money, says Reiner. It's extremely vulnerable to ask, how does it affect my business and my worth if I acknowledge to others that I am not making as much as they perceive me to be making? Last year, Reiner told The New Yorker that she didn't feel she and her co-stars were paid fairly for Orange is the New Black, a hit Netflix series that was set in a woman's prison and featured a diverse, mostly female ensemble cast. Take power behind the scenes. Actresses running production companies is not a new phenomenon. Mary Pickford, Lucille Ball, and Mary Tyler Moore all launched their own companies, albeit alongside their husbands, in the 20th century. But today, the evolution from actress to business leader is a rite of passage for women wanting to future-proof their careers while also influencing the direction of the industry. Many of Hollywood's leading men have taken the same route, of course. I think that it's been wonderful for very powerful artists to say, "I'm going to be in control of my destiny and I'm going to kick the door open," says Denano. "Not only are these projects potential vehicles for myself, but I'm going to open the door and pull everybody else up with me." Britton, Natalie Portman, Margot Robbie, Oprah Winfrey, and Kerry Washington are among the A-listers who have production companies. But it is Witherspoon's Hello Sunshine that provides the most visible example of an actress building an empire. Since its inception in 2016, the company has made 15 TV series and 7 film projects, including The Morning Show, Daisy Jones the Six, and of course, Big Little Lies, which broke ground in 2017 by bringing a movie star cast, Witherspoon, Kidman, Dern, Shailene Woodley, to the small screen. That show, an adaptation of the novel by Leanne Moriarty, centered on the complicated lives of a group of privileged middle-aged Californian women and became an awards magnet, as well as a roaring ratings hit. Its success marked a watershed moment for TV, proving that a show about friendships between women with complex adult lives could become a critical and commercial juggernaut. The lack of women seeing their full lived experience on the screen was an opportunity we've all stepped into, says Sarah Harden, CEO of Hello Sunshine. "It's no surprise to anyone that audiences show up if you execute, and our job is to execute really, really well. Addressing this authorship and representation gap is big business." That thesis is being tested in the marketplace. In 2021, Witherspoon sold a majority stake in Hello Sunshine to Blackstone-backed Candle Media for $900 million. But last year, the company's profits came in at only 10% of a projected $80 million, a shortfall that Candle Media attributed to the Hollywood strikes and other industry headwinds. Harden is often asked whether Hello Sunshine prioritizes its mission of supporting women who have unique voices and lived experiences over profitability, a question corporations trying to balance profits with social and environmental impact are familiar with. "Everything we do has to do both," Harden says. "We cannot do the next thing if we do not build a financially successful, profitable company. Our success is a form of power because it allows us to say yes to things or no to things without unnatural pressures." Still, USC's Smith cautions against taking these examples of stars championing women-centric productions as a bellwether of the broader situation across Hollywood. "I would say it's hope for folks to look to, but they are not representative of the hiring practices that apply to the rest of the industry," she says, citing an Annenberg Inclusion Initiative study that shows only 26% of speaking characters over age 40 were women in 2022's 100 most popular films. "If your name is not Meryl, Maggie, or Judy, your opportunities are going to be very limited." Meanwhile, Britton is still trying to find hysterical women a home. So far, Deep Blue Productions has produced a docuseries about mothers in the animal kingdom, and it has several other projects in its sights. Britton remains determined to champion stories about the less explored facets of womanhood. "Pushing up against the structures that are in place to prevent us from even having those shows on the air," she says, "is now part of the job for me." Our next article is, "AI Isn't Coming for Your Job. At least not yet," by Jeremy Kahn. When CEOs talk to investors about layoffs, they usually blame economic uncertainty or business headwinds. Now a new term is starting to crop up in these announcements: AI. In recent months, shipping giant UPS announced plans to cut 12,000 office jobs that CEO Carol Tomei said were unlikely to return because the company was increasingly using AI to automate tasks these workers performed. Meanwhile, financial giant BlackRock said it would eliminate about 600 positions, couching the cuts as an effort to prepare for coming shifts in the asset management industry, of which AI is among several drivers. Then there was Google, which recently laid off ad sales staff partly because new AI tools were helping customers manage ad campaigns themselves. And IBM CEO Arvind Krishna said Big Blue would pause hiring for 7,800 roles because AI could now do the work instead. To some commentators, these developments are early confirmation that long-standing predictions of AI causing widespread job loss, perhaps even ushering in an era of mass unemployment, are about to be realized. This narrative of AI-driven job loss is so ingrained in the public consciousness that people often see evidence for it when none exists. While the U.S. unemployment rate rose slightly to 3.9% in February, it remains near historic lows. Yet, when executive search firm Challenger Gray & Christmas released a report saying there had been 4,600 U.S. job cuts directly attributed to AI from May to January, some commentators interpreted the relatively low number as evidence that firms were hiding the true extent of AI casualties because they feared public backlash. It's possible that one day there will be a significant number of jobs lost because of AI. Goldman Sachs forecast AI software could automate the equivalent of 300 million full-time roles globally by 2030. But that day has not yet arrived, economists and business analysts say. This is not that moment, notes Daniel Susskind, an economics professor at King's College London and the author of several books on technology's impact on work, including the forthcoming Growth, A History and a Reckoning. Right now, wide-scale AI deployment is held back by several factors. Many companies are still just trying to figure out how to use it in ways that would justify the sky-high cost. Furthermore, Boston Consulting Group recently reported that most top executives are anxious about using AI across their organization given the risk of hallucinations, where AI software produces sometimes dangerously inaccurate information. So why then are some CEOs mentioning AI in the same breath as layoffs? Some of it is just marketing spin, experts say. Aaron Ling, an assistant professor specializing in AI and the future of work at the University of Surrey in the UK, said AI is often simply a convenient cover for layoffs that are the result of bad management, struggling businesses, and deteriorating economic conditions. For public companies, the bad news that they've had to cut jobs because of financial distress becomes slightly better news because of AI, says Grace Lorden, an economist and professor of behavioral science at the London School of Economics. It looks like smart cost-cutting. This certainly seems to be the case with UPS. At the same time the company announced layoffs and mentioned its increasing use of AI, it delivered the unpleasant news to Wall Street that it had missed forecast revenue and earnings numbers and was lowering its revenue guidance for the coming year. Package delivery volumes are also down. AI was pretty much the only positive thing Tomei mentioned. The situation at Google and some other tech companies is more nuanced. Here they aren't simply trying to burnish their tech street cred. They already have that in spades. Instead, the layoffs are about cutting costs to invest more in developing AI because the computing resources and human machine learning talent needed are so pricey. So in these cases, AI is, in fact, linked to job loss, but not for the reason people have long feared. Carl Benedict Frey, the University of Oxford economist who co-authored one of the first landmark studies of AI's potential impact on jobs, says that people are probably overestimating the job loss generative AI will cause in the near term. Generative AI is not an outright automation technology, he says, noting that people are still needed to write the prompts that are fed to the software and to check the quality of its output. You need a human in the loop in most cases. He's among those who think we could see a significant Uber effect from AI, where the technology lets less skilled and less experienced workers take on higher level tasks. Uber allowed anyone with a driver's license and a car to potentially become a taxi driver. As a result, many more people became drivers for hire. Similarly, AI co-pilots could help many more individuals perform legal, financial, or software coding tasks. Rather than eliminating jobs in these fields, this technology could help their ranks soar, Frey says. That's because all evidence suggests there is a large demand for professional services that is not currently being met, partly because such services are too expensive for many customers to afford. But just as Uber was bad news for taxi drivers who struggled in the face of lower cost competition, certain existing employees may see their wages fall, or at least stagnate, because of AI. On the other hand, even these reduced wages might be more than what less skilled workers can earn in other fields today. So, overall, economic inequality could be reduced. Frey is less sanguine about AI's longer-term effects, however. He says AI may currently be in its lamplighter phase. When streetlights were powered by gas, people were employed to ignite each lamp every day at dusk using a flaming wick carried on a long pole. When electric bulbs were introduced, the lamplighters kept their jobs because each streetlight had to be switched on individually. But soon, cities began installing switches that controlled entire city blocks, and eventually timers and light sensors meant no human intervention was needed at all. Frey thinks AI could well follow a similar path, with today's period of relatively little job displacement lulling us into a false sense of security. Almost everyone agrees AI is ushering in an era of uncertainty and disruption, and that workers will need to be prepared to learn new skills and shift roles. Many experts argue government should do more to encourage lifelong education and retraining. And Susskind says government should eliminate tax incentives that encourage businesses to use AI to replace workers rather than augment them. Taking these steps now could mean that the AI doomsday scenarios of mass unemployment never come to pass. At the very least, we should stop panicking about CEO pronouncements on AI and layoffs and just get back to work. You've been listening to Fortune Magazine on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radios or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at owlradio.org. Thank you for listening to Fortune Magazine. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. I'm John St. Pierre, thanking you for being the best part of Owl Radio.